carried away. The witch doctor stared down at Groth, and the look he gave the herd chief was far from comforting. The tribe's leader had looked at him with hungry contempt, the superior disdain of victor towards vanquished. Bearcloak did not focus on Groth, but rather gazed through him. The witch doctor's thoughts were directed to some future ambition, something that gave his eyes the gleam of a fanatic. Eventually, the witch doctor turned away. Groth watched the elder slip inside one of the tents. His attention was turned back to the butchering stone and the tortured cries that rose from it. The tribeswomen did not have the mercy to kill the captives before they started to skin them for the cook fires.
"Win Groth free?"
Chagrak snarled. The remaining prisoners added their own pleas to the Bestigor's question. Groth kept silent. He watched the butchery of the beastkin and wondered if any of them would leave this village. His eyes drifted over to the witch doctor's hut, and he wondered if the savage humans had an even grimmer fate in store for them. The anguished howls as the beastkin were slaughtered echoed through the winding canyons. The sounds gave Sorgas pause as he crept along the edge of a narrow gorge. It might be unwise to follow the trail left by the tribesmen. Certainly, some of the war herd had been captured alive, but that did not mean Groth was one of them. Even if he was, the howls the shaman was hearing might be the chieftain's death cries. Once again, Sorgas wondered if he should just forget about Groth. The hunters who had captured the war herd were so animalistic that he worried their senses might be even sharper than those of more civilized breeds of men. The shaman's spells of concealment had guarded him before, but that was when the tribe was busy fighting and subduing the beastkin. Without the din of combat raging and the thrill of battle demanding their attention, the hunters might not be so easy to deceive. Sorgas did not want to expend all of his magic hiding from the primitives, not when his goal was so near. Sorgas turned his attention for the 100th time to the forested slopes of Beastgrave. The gnarled, sinister trees beckoned to him. The jagged cliffs called out with a compelling force. Somewhere within the mountain was a power of incredible magnitude, just waiting for someone bold enough to seize it. Sorgas could be the one. The shaman had considered that possibility from the moment Groth had made him aware of the vision he had seen. It was the fact the vision had come to the herd chief rather than himself that tempered his ambitions. If the dark gods meant Sorgas to claim the power for himself, surely he would have been shown such a prophecy instead of Groth. The shaman continued to slink along the edge of the crevasse, dividing his attention between the rocky terrain at his level and the ground at the bottom of the gorge. Increasingly, he saw signs of habitation below. There were piles of bones and other refuse heaped about the walls, the waste of either a large or a long-established community. At length, the narrow gorge opened out into a wider canyon. Striated tiers descended in a bowl-like fashion to a depression hundreds of feet below. Huts made from hide had been raised on each tier, growing in number as they moved towards the bottom of the canyon. Sorgas smelt the odour of cooking meat wafting up from the many fires that flashed from the lowest level. Scores of tribesmen were gathered there, feasting on the spoils of their latest hunt. Sorgas looked around him at the rocks and crags. He listened for any sound that might betray a lurking spy. He sniffed the air for the scent of a hidden enemy. When he was satisfied there was no one, he sat down at the lip of the cliff. From under his robes, he drew a dagger fashioned from the horn of another beastkin shaman, an enemy he had disposed of years before. Some of the dead mystic's eldritch connection lingered on in his horn, making it a useful implement to evoke the raw power of chaos. A snarl of pain escaped Sorgas's jaws as he drove the sharp point of the horn into his thigh. A little trickle of blood seeped out and stained the sides of the object. The shaman lifted the soiled dagger to his face and let his tongue lick the gore. The blood was altered by the horn, infused with eerie properties from the realm of the gods. The burn of arcane energy surged into him, sizzling through every nerve and sinew. Control was the paramount discipline of all who practiced the black arts. Sorgas fought for control, commanding the rampant energies to his needs, rendering specific definition to the formless disorder. His eyes glowed with unnatural power as he evoked his spell, a refinement, an enhancement of the magic that had warned him of the tribesmen well before they attacked the war herd. Sorgas fixed his augmented senses on the primitive village below. The squat, brutish hunters gathered about the cook fires as they devoured steaming slivers of meat. He watched as their women used bone knives to flay shrieking beastkin atop a gore-stained slab of stone. His attention lingered on the skull-adorned hut, where a bearskin-clad tribesman performed crude divination spells with a dead bird and a handful of wolf teeth. The shaman spotted what he was searching for. He found the beastkin the hunters still held captive. Less than 10 of them remained. He recognized the Bestigor Chagrak and a few of the others. The one he was seeking seemed to be absent. Perhaps already Groth's flesh was being devoured by the huntsmen. It was an ignominious fate for the herd chief who wanted to be beast lord and had travelled so far to seize what he believed to be his destiny. Sorgas wondered if it might be worth trying to free Chagrak and using him as Groth's substitute. Certainly, if the herd chief was dead, he could no longer perform the deeds in his vision. It would fall to some other to take up the quest. Why should it not be Chagrak, with Sorgas there to guide and advise him, of course? The shaman had almost decided to risk going down and sneaking Chagrak away from the village when he suddenly spotted a lone captive lying some distance from the others. He recognized Groth. The stubborn herd chief was bound, arms and legs tied tight at his sides, but he was trying to escape just the same. Lying on his back, able to manipulate only his hands, he was dragging himself away from the others and trying to reach one of the nearby huts. It looked to be both arduous and painful, but it was not Groth's discomfort that concerned Sorgas. It was whether the herd chief could make good on his escape. If he reached the hut, he might find something with which to cut his bonds. Was that what Sorgas wanted? Groth was already a difficult chieftain to manipulate. With the power waiting inside Beastgrave, he would be even harder to control. The ways of chaos were always capricious. It might be that Groth's vision was intended as a warning to Sorgas, a warning of the threat he posed. Sorgas lifted his eyes from the village to the mountain that loomed above it. The forests and crags still beckoned him. He was certain it was more than his imagining. As his gaze swept across it, he was drawn to a dark opening in the side, midway down its slopes. A cave, just such a cave as Groth had described. An entrance to the chambers within Beastgrave, a passage to the slumbering titan and the prize that could make someone beast lord. Why Groth? Why even Chagrak? Why not Sorgas himself? If the vision was meant as a warning to him, then the power was still there to be claimed. Sorgas returned his gaze to Groth. The chieftain was making steady progress towards the hut. None of the tribesmen had noticed his sluggish crawl. The shaman decided to change that. He was uncertain of many things, but on one point he had come to a decision. Groth was not going to seize the power he craved. The shaman's sight narrowed, focusing on the bear-garbed witch doctor. He siphoned some of his magic to interfere with the man's divinations. Manipulating the painted teeth being tossed on the ground, Sorgas alerted the witch doctor to what was happening only a dozen yards away. The witch doctor rushed out from his hut. He turned to where the captives were lying. He spotted Groth crawling away. The man rushed to the fires and waved his arms in alarm. A mob of tribesmen dashed away from their meals and converged on the herd chief. They battered Groth with clubs and fists, relenting only when he stopped moving. They dragged him back to the others and dumped him beside Chagrak. Sorgas let the spell enhancing his senses fade away. He was disappointed that the tribesmen had allowed Groth to survive, but at least they had kept him from escaping. The herd chief would be watched more closely. He would not get another chance. Before too long, he would be turned over to the women and their knives. That would be the end of Groth. Sorgas looked back to Beastgrave. The location of the cave was fixed in his mind. He would go there while the tribesmen feasted. While Groth was being devoured, he would find the power hidden inside the mountain. Groth drifted in and out of consciousness for the rest of the day. The beating he had been given by the tribesmen left his head feeling as though a mammoth had stepped on it. Every time he took a breath, he found another chip from a broken tooth to spit out of his mouth. His nose was so choked by dried blood that it was impossible to draw air through it. One eye was sealed shut by the blood that had dripped across it, while the other felt like it wanted to pop from its socket. His left ear was still ringing after a hunter had used it to stop his club. For all of that, though, the herd chief was still alive. The witch doctor had prevented the men from going too far when they attacked him outside the hut. Bearcloak had even inspected Groth afterwards, checking to make certain he was still alive. Even when the war chief came looking for more meat to feed his tribe, the leader was warned away. The witch doctor wanted the rest of the beastkin alive. Groth was certain the human's reasons were far from pleasant. It was late afternoon when the witch doctor came for the captives. He was accompanied by dozens of tribesmen who were caked in white mud and had simple pictoglyphs painted on their chests. Even the axe-carrying war chief adopted the mud mantle, though he remained detached when the other mud shirts gathered up their captives and carried them through the village. Groth saw humans at the entrance of every hut, young and old, male and female, watching with ghoulish interest as the strange procession marched past. Bearcloak took a place at the front of the group as they left the village and started towards the base of the mountain. The axeman and the mudshirts, not carrying the prisoners, went to the back of the procession. Each of them had a weapon of some kind. Groth noted that some of the hunters carried weapons they had stolen from the beastkin. One of them had Togra's bow, while another had the auric cleaver Groth had wielded. The tribesmen carried their prisoners through a narrow gorge, the walls so close together that they were forced to proceed in single file. Groth saw that they were marked with many pictoglyphs that depicted everything from men hunting animals to winged dragons hunting men. There was a certain vividness to the simple pictures, and the herd chief was struck by the variety of figures painted on the sides of the gorge. There were humans of far different aspect than the tribesmen, arrayed in heavy armor of varying types. He saw the bearded Duardin with their weird devices and strange sticks that dealt death from a distance. There were fanged aurochs and sneaky grots, the green skins depicted in battle with the tribesmen. Verminous raiders with long tails were shown being chased from the canyon village, hulking ogres surrounded by hunters casting spears into them, monstrous trogoths smashing through the tribesmen who tried to stop them. Groth even saw tree fiends, the branches atop their heads splayed out like great antlers. What most arrested the herd chief's interest was the one common feature of all the images. Whether the tribesmen were shown chopping away at a tree fiend or being struck down by a gold-armored knight, rising over them was the same shape, setting the scene for their battle. It was the distinct outline of the mountain that Groth had travelled so far to find, Beastgrave. The savage procession at last reached a part of the gorge where a subsidence had brought part of the wall crumbling down. The fallen earth and rock created a ramp up which the tribesmen carried the beastkin. They had been moving closer to the mountain and were now at the base of Beastgrave. Bearcloak called out to the humans, whistling and grunting as he waved his hands over them and spat a dark liquid into the air. The ritual was short, and soon the procession was moving again. The war chief and the armed tribesmen marching at the back of the column spread out to flank the hunters carrying the beastkin. The human warriors watched the boulders and trees, alert for danger. The tribesmen drew nearer to the slopes of Beastgrave. The raw cliffs of the mountain towered over them. Groth felt a sense of awe despite his situation. The place had a presence that surpassed anything he had felt before. He could not define the sensation, but only liken it to when he was a cub and had hidden in the brush from an Amok Tuskor. It was like that, feeling small and helpless before an immeasurably more powerful creature. The witch doctor cried out again and stopped the procession. They stood before an open area at the foot of the mountain. No trees grew here. No rocks lay strewn about the ground. The earth was barren, devoid of any feature that might distinguish it. Its emptiness was what made it remarkable and sinister. After a last show of ceremony from Bearcloak, the tribesmen walked out onto the barren ground. They drew help from the guards as they lifted the posts on which the beastkin were bound. One by one, they lifted the logs so they stood at a sharp angle and with stone hammers drove them into the ground. Each stake was spread several yards from the others and positioned so the captives bound to them would face the mountain. Groth's stake was raised last of all, and the tribal war chief himself swung the hammer that drove it into the ground. The squat human's dark eyes stared into the beastman's in a silent expression of hate. The war chief fingered the strap of his axe and looked as though he might strike Groth down and cheat the witch doctor out of whatever fate he had chosen for the captives. An ugly leer worked itself onto the man's face. He glanced from Groth to the mountain and laughed. He turned away and joined the other tribesmen as they retreated back to the trees. The captives around Groth were silent. They had abandoned whatever hope they had that the chieftain could rescue them when he was caught crawling towards the hut. It was impressive enough that he had survived the beating. Chagrak, however, still found the breath to mock the herd chief.
"Still wait?" he snarled. "Groth not break bonds? Wait for bonds to rot, then break?"
Groth spat at the Bestigor, the spittle hitting his challenger in the eye. The outraged howl that rose from Chagrak was a petty comfort, but he found it satisfying. Chagrak's howls fell silent when the tribesmen chanted. The harsh, guttural voices sounded in a deep-throated cadence that surged through the air. Groth felt the post he was tied to vibrating. It shivered with increasing violence, sending a shudder through his bones. Other beastkin cried out in fright and confusion. The very ground under their hooves quaked. A powerful tremor rolled through the earth, increasing in intensity with each heartbeat. A thunderous groan roared across the scene. The cries of the bound beastkin turned to wails of horror as they beheld what was happening at the bottom of the mountain. The cliff cracked apart, extending long fingers of rock out over the barren ground. To Groth, they looked like colossal worms made of stone burrowing out from the side of Beastgrave. The gigantic protrusions stretched further and further out from the cliff, pawing blindly at the ground. The sweep of those tremendous fingers explained why the terrain was so empty. and why the hunters had placed the stakes where they had. The captives were there for the reaching mountain to find, sacrificial offerings to Beastgrave. One of the gargantuan fingers fell upon a bison-faced gore. The beastman shrieked as his body was pulverized under the tremendous mass. The protrusion stopped moving for a moment, as though registering the fact it had crushed someone under its bulk. It slid backwards and withdrew into the cliff, grinding the captive against the ground and leaving a hideous smear of blood and flesh in its wake. A fierce shout of delight boomed from the watching tribesmen as the mountain claimed its first sacrifice. Groth cursed the humans and wished he could get free so that he might have a chance to repay their viciousness in kind. Though one of the rock fingers had withdrawn, the others continued to advance and grope blindly at the ground. Soon, one of them found a second beastkin, crushing him in the same way as the first. Groth saw there were enough of the protrusions to claim each of them. The witch doctor had planned it this way, an offering for each claw in the hand of Beastgrave. Beastgrave. The mountain was every bit as ominous as in Kyra's premonitions. As she looked upon its slopes from the broken, boulder-strewn land that bordered its western face, it occurred to her that nothing about it was natural. From the cut of the cliffs to the depths of the forests that grew upon it, everything had that uncanny quality. The branch wraith was familiar enough with the ways of magic to feel when a site had been exposed to some powerful sorcery. Typically, it was an area no bigger in circumference than the trunk of a pine midway through its second century. The residue from the conjuration was localized, restricted to a confined area, and could only be felt when a sensitive was right at the edge of the afflicted region. This was different. Kyra could feel the magical aura of Beastgrave from miles away. She could even catch something of its flavor. It was old, so old it might have been contemporary with the gods themselves in the age of myth. It was sinister, rife with a macabre essence that betokened its grim beginnings and dire intentions. It was hungry. That last property was the one to make the branch wraith the most uneasy. The former betokened the mountain's background, its power, and nature. The latter was a warning of its motivations.
"A horrible place," Yanir declared, as she walked from the last vestiges of the jungle.
Ishia was with her, her body held at an awkward angle as she moved. The loss of her arm in the marsh had thrown off the dryad's balance, and she was still figuring out the best way to compensate.
"Anywhere that could harbour the kind of power the root cutter craves was bound to be unpleasant," Kyra said.
She tried to mitigate exactly how unpleasant her impression of the place was. There was no sense alarming the dryads. Troubled or at ease, they still had to go to the mountain.
"How far ahead do you think the twist flesh are?"
Ishia asked.
"We seemed to be gaining on them when we reached the jungle."
It was true. For all their woodcraft, the beastkin were still clumsy amateurs beside the Sylvaneth. Kyra judged that a gap, which might have been days in Groth's favour, had narrowed down to only a few hours when the trail delved into the jungle. Nias had continually warned them against moving too fast, lest they stumble on stragglers and thereby alert the rest of the twist flesh.
"We will know better when Nias comes back," Kyra said.
As usual, the Sylvaneth tracker had ranged ahead of the rest of them. None of them had seen her since she drifted back to advise them that the jungle was going to end and they would be entering a desolate land of rock and dirt.
"Do you think she is in trouble?"
Yanir's voice had an edge to it. After skulking about the marsh and jungle, she was eager for an enemy against which she could fight back.
"She has been gone a long time,"
Ishia added. Her tone was not eager, but worried. Kyra folded her hands before her, letting the fingers grow out and twine together. Shoots from the tips branched out, forming arcane symbols. Through her mouth, a name was whispered.
Nyas, Nyas.
The spell was simple when Kyra wished to merge her essence with a Sylvaneth who was close. She had no idea how far away Nyas had gone. That made the enchantment far more difficult. Most branch wraiths would not even attempt it. Had the fate of Thornwild, and possibly all the Sylvaneth refuges in Gur, not been in jeopardy, Kyra would not have attempted it either. A single mistake, some unforeseen counter-magic, and the astral projection would be disrupted, that part of her essence scattered beyond recall. She would be diminished, left with only what she retained in her own body. At best, her magical powers would wither. There was also the possibility she would be so reduced as to render her an imbecile. Kyra could not think about those hazards. Any distraction would cause her to lose focus, and she needed her entire concentration for the spell. As she felt her essence streaming away from her wooden body, she felt it trying to dissipate and scatter in every direction. Only by force of will was she able to bind her spirit and keep herself whole. The landscape flew below her as Kyra's essence soared through the air. She could not pick out features or distinguish particulars. There was only the sense of motion and the knowledge that she was flying across the land beyond the jungle. No, there was something more. Something that remained sharp and distinct despite the haze of her disembodied senses. The mountain. Beastgrave itself was as clear and sharp as when she'd seen it with her corporeal form. That fact sent a shudder through Kyra's spirit. The enormity of the mountain's power would have to be tremendous for it to retain such clarity to her as she was now. The branch wraith's concentration faltered as panic gripped her. She felt her essence starting to fray. Her fear intensified as she fought to bind the strands back together, making the task even more difficult. A vicious circle that intensified her agitation and made her efforts even harder. Kyra was at the edge of despair, her spirit threatening to lose all cohesion when all the frayed strands snapped back together. She felt herself being funneled into a new vessel. At the very moment of disaster, her projected essence reached Nyas and poured into the dryad's wooden body. Nyas swayed in shock at the abrupt transposition of Kyra's essence. In normal circumstances, the spell would have been smooth, soothing. Now it was violent, a psychic invasion that had the branch wraith's presence flooding through Nyas, coiling around her own spirit like a python. Even divided between bodies, Kyra's spirit dwarfed that of Nyas. Her essence was capable of smothering the dryads. She struggled to restrain the flood, condensing her awareness in the recesses of Nyas's being. Kyra felt the surge of pain crackle through Nyas as her body adjusted to the shock of the sudden translocation. Bark flaked away from her trunk. Some of the branches on her head crumbled away entirely. The light in her eyes flickered and struggled to retain its glow. Her legs creaked as they struggled to keep her upright.
"Forgive me," Kyra's essence begged Nyas.
"There is no need for pardon," Nyas replied. "The abruptness, it has made me know. Parts of your essence have bled into mine. I know the desperate need that made you take such risk." "The mountain is here," Kyra said. "I have seen the terrible power of Beastgrave. If it is but the smallest part of that power Groth intends to steal, he will destroy the Thornwild." "I know," Nyas said, a tremor in her mind. "When you joined to me, I saw Beastgrave as you have seen it. The rootcutter must be stopped. If it means all our lives, we have to prevent him from reaching the mountain."
Kyra directed her attention to the dryad's eyes. She could see what Nyas was looking at. More, she could interpret what she saw as Nyas would, a benefit of their melded existence. The ground was rocky, with only limited vegetation. It was not the best terrain for showing footprints, but Nyas had found them all the same.
She had detected the trail of Groth's war herd, as well as that of the rivals already following them. With the rootcutter as their primary concern, his was the path Nias followed. Before too far, it transpired that either trail would have lent itself to the same purpose. They converged. Groth's rivals had decided they were tired of following. Ambushed, Kyra interpreted the signs in the dirt. Splashes of blood were everywhere, as were a few discarded weapons, broken arrows and spears, the odd knife or club. For the most part, they were the rough weapons favoured by the twist flesh, but there were a few stone-tipped spears that looked crude even by their primitive standards.
It may be that Groth was attacked by his own kind, Nias said.
She drew Kyra's attention to other tracks. They were not the hooves and clawed feet of Beastkin. These prints were those of human feet.
Other quick bloods attacked the twist flesh.
She pointed in the direction of Beastgrave.
They came from the direction of the mountain, and they were the victors.
Kyra looked at the signs left by the battle.
No corpses, she said. The victors took away the dead, their own and those of the twist flesh.
Nias gestured to the tracks that led away from the fight.
See how deep the human prints are. They were carrying heavy burdens when they left here. It is possible they will eat the dead.
Kyra felt the hope flare inside Nias as she added,
Maybe Groth is already dead. We must know he is, Kyra said. We must verify his threat is ended.
She turned Nias's head back to the mountain.
And we will still need to go inside Beastgrave and destroy the thing that would have given the rootcutter such power. Only then will the threat to the Thornwild really be over.
Kyra sensed the disturbance in Nias's mind.
If Groth is dead, there will be no one to follow, no one to lead us to the relic. It will make our duty much harder, but not impossible, Kyra said. You do not believe that, Nias corrected her. Without the rootcutter, we may never find it. We will try, Kyra declared. My body will guide Yanir and Ishia to us. Once we are all here, we will follow this new trail. We will see for ourselves if Groth is dead.
Chapter 6 The Sylvaneth followed the trail left by the Quickblood. The force that had prevailed against the Beastkin was joined at several points by smaller bands of hunters. Always they marched closer to the mountain. It was clear to Kyra that whoever these humans were, their habitation was somewhere near Beastgrave, if not on or in the mountain itself. With increasing frequency, the Sylvaneth encountered steep drops into winding canyons. The trail they were following skirted these, at least until they came to one where an incline offered easy passage into the fissure. Nias went down the gorge a short distance and confirmed that the Quickblood had gone through it and that they were still carrying their burdens. Kyra looked across the plateau. Off in the area of the mountain, she could make out several plumes of smoke.
We do not need to follow them into the gorge, she told Nias, and pointed to the rising smoke. That is where we will find their village. That is where they are going.
Yanir was pleased by the news.
It is fortunate we can avoid the fissure. The walls are narrow there with less room to move. Good for the Quickblood, maybe, but not so good for us.
If these people have killed the rootcutter, why should we have cause to fight them?
Ishia shook her head in regret.
The Quickblood are always ready to fight, Yanir told her. With or without cause, their first thought is violence. If you expect different from them, you may not be able to learn from the mistake.
Kyra dampened some of Yanir's rhetoric.
Quickblood are not so vicious. Some, at least.
She waved her hand at the tracks. Even though these have fought the twist flesh, we cannot assume they are friendly to us. How they might regard us is unknown. It is always prudent to be careful about the unknown.
The Sylvaneth continued across the plateau, moving towards the distant smoke. Except for a few buzzards soaring overhead and some scraggly hares that kept close to the shelter of their burrows, Kyra saw no signs of activity. Nias kept close to the gorge, but apart from a few lizards, nothing was moving down there either. The humans and the twist flesh were not abroad, it appeared. As the evidence that they were gone increased, Kyra urged the dryads to make haste.
It seems certain they have gone to their village, Kyra said. If we can still find the twist flesh, that is where they must be.
We can let the quick blood attend to them,
Yanir reminded Kyra. The branch wraith was not sure that they could afford to take such a strategy. But what would be the alternative? Their chances against the twist flesh warbands had been poor enough. They would be far worse trying to fight an entire village of humans, especially to capture someone the Sylvaneth wanted dead anyway.
It may come to that, Kyra told the dryads. We will know when we reach their village.
The plumes of smoke grew larger and more distinct as the Sylvaneth marched onwards. So, too, did the imposing bulk of Beastgrave. The ominous presence of the mountain became a permanent chill inside Kyra's being, an icy finger that poked into her mind. It was goading her, pulling at her with an allure that was at once fascinating and repulsive. Even if Groth was destroyed, she would have to go to Beastgrave. The knowledge was as enticing as it was terrifying. From the lip of a wide canyon, Kyra looked down on the village. She had seen many human settlements over her long life, and especially on her journey to find Thornwild. But this was unique in her experience. It was so raw and primitive, it would have suited the simplest of Auruk tribes, or an Ogor hunting camp. The huts were made from hide and bone, carved femurs from large animals serving as their supports. They were spread out along the tiered basin of the canyon. From what Kyra could tell, lone tribesmen lived in the huts scattered on the higher levels, while family groups occupied the dwellings clustered towards the centre. At that centre, the Sylvaneth saw many cook fires, over which chunks of meat were laid. Kyra's first good view of the tribesmen came from those gathered around the fires. They were short but powerful in build, their bodies almost entirely covered in wiry hair. They had heavy features and low foreheads. They wore only scraps of clothing fashioned from animal hides.
Look!
Nias directed everyone's attention to a big stone slab where several tribeswomen were skinning a carcass. When they were finished, a couple of hunters lifted the body and carried it down to the fires. There was no mistaking the flayed corpse. It was that of a twist flesh.
They are eating them,
Ishia shuddered.
No less than what the twist flesh would have done had the positions been reversed,
Kyra stated. Her eyes scoured the village, dreading and hoping to see some proof that Groth had been butchered by these people. As her gaze roved across the settlement, she spotted a line of tribesmen caked in mud marching away towards a nearby fissure. Some of the hunters were carrying long poles between them. Bound to each of the poles was a captive beastkin.
They are carrying away the rest of the twist flesh, Kyra said.
She drew the notice of the dryads to the file of hunters moving into the fissure.
Where are they going?
Yanir asked.
The direction they are moving in, unless the fissure doubles back on itself, will take them closer to Beastgrave,
Nias observed.
Or to the mountain itself,
Kyra said.
Or inside the mountain,
she added with a shiver. It was possible that the tribesmen would take Groth right to where the sleeping godbeast was entombed.
Whatever their intention, we have to follow them.
Ishia waved her remaining hand at the fires.
Maybe they have already eaten the root cutter.
We have to be sure of that, Kyra told her. We have to make sure.
Nias expressed the grim thought that was nagging at all of them.
It would be easier for us if he is alive. The root cutter may know where this relic is hidden. If we could follow him, we could destroy both him and it.
That would end the threat hanging over Thornwild, Kyra agreed. But we will learn nothing if we stay here. We must follow the Quickblood and find out if Groth is alive. We must see what they intend to do with him. Once we know that, we will know better what we can do.
The Sylvaneth drew back from the canyon and started across the plateau. They would follow the tribesmen, discover who their captives were, and see where they were being taken. Despite the more obvious dangers of their task, it was a different aspect of it that dominated Kyra's mind and made her blood sap cold. Soon, they would not merely be gazing upon Beastgrave, they would be on the very mountain itself. The forest that clothed the slopes of Beastgrave was sick. Kyra felt its vileness vibrating from the trees. There was an awareness here, but it was a depraved sort of intelligence, malformed into something monstrous. It was not the taint of chaos, but a contamination far older and more complete. The gnarled trees had not been perverted out of all semblance to what they should be. It was more like they had been completely taken apart and rebuilt, shaped into a new and terrible aspect. Kyra knew the dryads sensed the wrongness of the trees. They had been hesitant to follow her into the forest to flank the procession of tribesmen. The branch wraith had expended some of her magic to block the vibrations from her companions, allowing them to press on without feeling the worst of the sickness all around them. For Kyra, there was no such respite. She was open to the full perversion of the forest, the ghastly impulses that whispered through the malformed trees, the urge to destroy for the sake of destruction, the compulsion to kill for the sake of death, the lust for carrion, decaying and being drawn up into the roots, the hideous desire to have the Sylvaneth join the forest's eternal misery. A beckoning whisper asked Kyra to forget about fear and duty, to discard all of her obligations and become part of the mountain.
Will they never stop? Kyra moaned.
She was unaware she had spoken until Nias turned towards her.
The Quickblood took no provisions with them, the dryad said. Even if they intend to eat their prisoners, they would have brought water with them. I do not think even they would trust water drawn from the mountain.
Kyra was thankful Nias believed it was the tribesmen she was speaking about. At least she could spare the dryads the loathsome whispering.
When they stop, we must be ready.
She looked at her companions and impressed on them a further point.
We may need to act fast, so everyone be ready to do what I say.
The dryads bowed in acknowledgement of her authority. The journey through the forest continued. Nias hugged the edge of the tree line, slipping through the profane timber, her bark shifting to adopt the colour and contour of her diseased surroundings. Kyra was hard-pressed to spot the dryad. She knew the tribesmen would have no chance at all. They heard the procession marching along the edge of the forest, grunting and whistling in their crude language. Soon the Sylvaneth saw the humans and their prisoners. Kyra gave a start when she saw the goat-headed Groth among the captives. The fiend from her premonition was still alive, battered and bloodied, but still alive. Doubt gnawed at her. Alive, he remained a threat to the Thornwild. Alive, he could still lead her to the sleeping god-beast. Or she could simply remain in this horrible forest and become one with the mountain. Kyra railed against the beckoning whispers. She would not forget who she was. She would not forsake the Thornwild. The tribesmen moved away from the forest, and carried their prisoners to a barren stretch of ground. The Sylvaneth watched as their bearskin-wearing priest performed some sort of ritual. A flicker of power rose from the man and dispersed towards the mountain. Some of the hunters broke away and carried the captives closer to the raw cliffs of Beastgrave. They drove the posts into the ground at sharp angles and quickly retreated. The Sylvaneth were forced to move around the tribesmen as the Quickblood withdrew into the shelter of the trees. Before, the men had been wary of the forest, but now they sought to hide themselves within it. Kyra pondered the purpose of their priest's spell and what the human had sought to conjure with his magic, what they could fear enough that they would seek safety in a forest they shunned. Kyra's answer came with a quaking rumble. She watched in amazement as the face of the cliff split open and fragmented into long tendrils of rock.
"The mountain is moving,"
Ishia gasped. The branch wraith shared Ishia's amazement. The ominous presence, the fearful impression of malignant intelligence that surrounded Beastgrave. None of these had suggested to Kyra that the mountain was animate in any way. She was no less transfixed with horrified fascination as the stony tendrils groped across the barren earth. But when one of those tendrils came smashing down on a tied beastman, she saw the energy that went slithering back into the mountain. In some way, it was feeding on the life force of its victims. Kyra shifted her gaze to where Groth was tied. In a matter of moments, the rootcutter could be crushed. Was that something she could allow to happen? With a new appreciation for the malevolence of Beastgrave, she did not think she could. In her vision, Groth found his way to the grave of the god beast. It was a gamble, but she had to trust that part of the vision was true and that she could act to prevent the rest of it from unfolding. "Watch over me," Kyra told the dryads. "I must fix all my attention on my magic." Yanir gripped the branch wraith's shoulder.
"What are you going to do?"
"What has to be done," Kyra said. "We need to destroy the relic. To do that, we need the rootcutter to guide us to it." There was no time for further explanation. Kyra focused on her conjuring, sealing off her mind from all other concerns. She envisioned a root burrowing through the earth, speeding away to free Groth from his bonds. Disgusted, she channeled that purpose into one of the trees and compelled its roots to accomplish what she demanded of them. The tree responded, but as it did, all of its vileness came pouring into her. The rest of the forest exulted in the lowering of her defenses, and all the filth of their debased essence came slithering into her mind. She fought to partition their influence, to keep part of herself clean and maintain the clarity to work her magic. Her efforts were only a partial success. Kyra's spell expanded beyond her intentions. Other trees responded to her call and sent their own roots burrowing to the sacrifices. Instead of freeing only Groth, there were roots erupting from the ground beside each of the stakes. Sharp thorns projected from them as they slithered upwards to cut away the bindings. Kyra struggled to maintain her focus, even as she felt the forest trying to consume her. Some of the twist flesh were free and broke away, fleeing towards the trees. The tribesmen howled in outrage and charged off in pursuit. Dimly she heard Yanir and Nias shouting at her, trying to warn her that the Quickblood were coming. She refused to break the spell. Groth was still tied. She had to keep working her magic until he was free, otherwise it was all for nothing. Something slammed into her, and she felt blood sap trickling down her trunk, but still she refused to relent. The angry howls of the tribesmen joined the shouts of the dryads, but Kyra kept her mind upon her conjuring. As the rock protrusions drew still closer, Groth felt something crawling around his legs. Twisting his head, he was able to look down and see a green vine with long thorns rising up from the earth. Snake-like, it slithered up his body, Around him, other beastkin cried out in surprise.
Silence!
Groth snapped at the others, worried their cries might draw the attention of the tribesmen. The sudden appearance of the vines was unnatural and smacked of magic. The witch doctor had no need to work spells against the captives now that the stone fingers were crushing them. This had to come from somewhere else. It could even be the work of Sorgas. Groth was more certain than ever that the shaman's spells were in play when the vines reached his legs and the thorns bit into his bonds. In a short time, the cords were cut through.
Still, Groth barked to the beastkin. Wait for all, be free.
It was a risk shouting to his followers, but thus far their captors had shown no sign of understanding their speech. He judged the risk was less than it would be if his warriors tried to flee while others were still tied to the stakes. The vines were crawling higher. Groth felt them soaring around his hands. As the thorns did their work, another beast man was crushed by the protrusions, and his body dragged back to the mountain. This reminder of looming death was too much for some of the beastkin. Three Ungors, already free from their bonds, scrambled away from their stakes and made a frantic dash towards the forest. At once there were enraged cries from the watching tribesmen. Many of them set off in pursuit of the escaped sacrifices. The war chief shouted at some of the hunters to come with him and check the captives who remained. Groth knew whatever chance he had would be gone once the war chief reached the stakes. He looked over at the beastkin who remained. Two of them were Ungors, Togra and a long-horned raider from Chagrak's group.
If you free, cut me loose,
he growled at the two beastmen.
No,
Chagrak snarled. He thrashed against his own bindings.
Help Chagrak, leave Groth.
The two Ungors did not hesitate. When they dropped clear of the stakes, they scrambled to where Groth was tied and tore at the last cords that held him. The herd chief just had time to gain his footing before the tribesmen were on them.
Now you fight Groth,
he growled at the human war chief. The man snapped something at the four mud shirts with him. Showing more metal than Chagrak, he sent them after the two Ungors. The man intended to finish Groth alone. Groth was taller and heavier than the war chief, but he was still weak from his ordeal. The first slashes of the war chief's axe bit into the beast man's hide, carving ugly furrows in his flesh. The sight of blood caused the human to smile and laugh. His next blow raked a gash across Groth's chest. A clump of fur dangled from the bloodied axe. Rage swelled inside Groth. He fought down the pain from the axe and charged at his foe. He caught the war chief's arm as the human took another swing at him.
Fight, Groth! Man flesh, die!
Exerting his fury, he bent the tribesman's limb back upon itself and broke the bone. The enemy screamed in agony and smashed his fist into Groth's face. He was still numb from the beating he had received, so the punch barely made any impression on the herd chief. He brought his hand raking down across the mud-caked chest and slashed deep cuts in the flesh beneath. The war chief reeled under the sudden, vicious assault. Groth gave him no opportunity for escape. He pressed his advantage and seized the man by the shoulders. A red frenzy gripped Groth, clouding his vision in a haze of madness. He lifted the struggling hunter off the ground. He glared into the man's dark eyes and slammed him into the same stake the herd chief had been tied to. The force of the blow impaled the human on the sharpened log and drove it through his chest in a welter of gore. Groth snarled at the dying hunter and seized the axe hanging from his broken arm. With a brutal wrench, he broke the tether and held the axe high. For an instant, he was tempted to bring it down, but then a cold smile formed on his face. Groth quickly backed away. The war chief stared at him in bewilderment until a dark shadow fell across him. The next instant, the human was obliterated as a finger of stone smashed down on the stake. Togra and the other Ungor had managed to hold off the other hunters long enough for the duel between Groth and the war chief to reach its savage finish. The other tribesmen saw the destruction of their leader and moaned in despair. Throwing down their weapons, the humans fled back towards the forest. The two Ungors, their anger roused, made to chase after them.
"Stay! No chase!" Groth ordered. "We go mountain. Let man flesh run."
He pointed the two beastkin towards the woods that dotted the slopes of Beastgrave. There was no measure for argument. With the rock protrusion still reaching out to claim victims, there was also no time to disagree. The Ungors simply nodded and took up the fallen weapons before dashing from the slope. Groth started to follow them, but he stopped and turned back. He intended to deal with Chagrak and make certain the Bestigor would never challenge him again. But when he looked, he found only an empty stake. His rival had broken free during the fight with the war chief and slipped away. Had one of the mountain's hungry fingers taken him, the stake would have been pulverized. A low whine had Groth turning again. There was one stake that still held a captive. Tied to the post lengthways, the beast hound Frang had yet to be freed by the vines. One of the stone protrusions reached towards the trapped creature. Before it could come smashing down, the herd chief ran to the stake, and with a swing of the axe, he cut the last of the ties. Frang fell to the ground and loped away, scurrying off towards the woods. As the protrusion came crashing down and splinters from the stake pelted his body, Groth decided to follow Frang's example and strike out for the mountain. He circled around the area the first Ungors had fled towards, aware that the witch doctor and many of the hunters had gone off in pursuit of the beastkin. He headed after the tracks left by Togra and his companion. They would prove useful if he caught up to them, having already exhibited their readiness to take his commands. Now that they were finally outside Beastgrave, Groth felt half the quest was over. What was left was to find a way down inside the mountain to probe its caverns for the grave of the god beast and the power that pulsed within its heart, the prize that would make Groth the mightiest beast lord to prowl the wilds of Gur in an age. Groth would soon claim his destiny. A shock rippled through Kyra when she felt Groth break free. She tried to break clear of her spell, to close herself again to the noxious vibrations of the forest, but as she did, she felt an awful resistance to her efforts. The trees had been quick to answer her magic, but they were not so eager to withdraw from her. They were trying to pour more of themselves into her, to profane that part of her essence she had denied them. Kyra struggled to free herself from the forest's possession, but her efforts only made their attack stronger. The barriers were fraying, and little weeds of filth were crawling into her essence. She was being consumed, transformed into something as abominable as the foul forest itself. With an abruptness that nearly shattered her mind, the forest's presence fled from her. At the very threshold of destruction, the branch wraith was reprieved. She sank her toe roots into the ground to keep from falling as her essence flowed back through her body. The cause for the sudden retreat of the forest's influence was quickly evident. Orange fingers of flame were licking around the nearby trees. Kyra's mind snapped back to full awareness. She saw the stone-tipped spear embedded in her side and wrenched it free. The dryads were around her, their hands transformed into long claws as they slashed at mud-painted tribesmen. Several of the humans had been struck down, but many more remained. They flung themselves against the Sylvaneth with the wild abandon of fanatics, indifferent to the death of their comrades so long as they might get closer to their foes. A ball of searing flame flashed past Kyra, striking one of the gnarled trees. The grey trunk instantly caught fire, crackling and splitting as the incendiary ate into it. No natural flame could have spread so quickly. Kyra knew it was magical. She turned to confront the conjurer. The bear-cloaked priest met the branch wraith's gaze. He flinched when he felt her glowing eyes on him, but his moment of fright only redoubled his hostility. Clasping both hands together, he focused on Kyra. He drew a deep breath, but when he exhaled, it was not air, but fire that left his mouth. A mote of flame grew larger and more malevolent as it sped away from the witch doctor. Kyra worked her own hasty magic, issuing a pulse of arcane energy that unraveled the witch doctor's spell. The ball of flame fizzled away, little drops of liquid fire flashing along the ground as it dissipated. The witch doctor stamped his feet and shouted in fury. He bit down on his tongue, drawing a trickle of blood, then clasped his hands together again. Kyra started to weave her own spell to attack the man. But as she did, a surge of fear held her back. After her near escape from this forest, she was reluctant to give shape to her magic. The witch doctor seized upon Kyra's hesitation. Again, he took a deep breath, but the magical fire he conjured was tinged a bright red and swelled to far greater size than it had before. Kyra tried to dissipate the attack, but all her counterspell did was crackle ineffectually around the oncoming attack. Before the blob of fire could strike Kyra, Yanir stepped in front of her. The old dryad held two tribesmen in her claws. One after the other, she threw the screaming men into the oncoming flame. The first was consumed utterly, his head and chest evaporating into a puff of smoke while the rest of his body went tumbling across the ground. The ball of fire continued on, and seared into the second man, but with far less effect. His body was a scorched mass when it crashed to the earth, charred but complete. The spell's strength all but spent, it swept on through Yanir as little more than a haze of heat.
"We cannot fight that man here," Kyra told Yanir. "We have to get him away from the forest."
The Sylvaneth disengaged from their foes and fled through the trees. The tribesmen were after them in an instant, crying and growling like a pack of hounds.
"They came after us when you freed the twist flesh," Yanir said.
It made sense to Kyra. The tribal priest was not without arcane abilities. He would have sensed where Kyra's spell came from. They raced through the trees. In any other forest, the Sylvaneth would have easily lost their pursuers. But here it was different. The terrain conspired against them, obstructing their flight while rendering aid to the hunters. Kyra slammed against trunks of trees she was certain had shifted their positions. Even the stealthy knight